picked up on the briefing by the International Trade Administration Commission of South Africa. We're looking at its third quarter financial and non-financial performance, which informs part of the committee's ongoing oversight on entities and service delivery and other sources as well. Can we then actually then invite our commissioner, the chief commissioner, to be able to actually speak to us about the matter? Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the honourable members. Good morning to you, Chairperson. I am accompanied by our CFO, Mr. Nzube Nkwana, who will assist me in the presentation, in particular in matters that relate to the financial. My name is Meluleke Nzimande. Honourable members, without any further waste of time, I would just like to start with my presentation. Something that you might have observed in the presentation is that it is not only confined to what is identified in the agenda as financial and non-financial report, but it also talks about ITEC generally. The reason for the inclusion of that background in the slide presentation was to take account of the fact that it is the first time that ITEC meets the sixth parliament, or portfolio committee in the sixth parliament, and because it's necessary just to bring members up to speed or to inform them about the role and mandate of ITEC. I will accordingly not dwell too much on that. I will run through it, assuming that that a lot has been read, and if there are any specific questions, then I'll take those questions. Thank you. ITEC is a public entity established in terms of the International Trade Administration Act. In 2024, it will be 100 years old, so it's a well-established entity, and it's almost synonymous with the industrial development of South Africa. The decision makers at ITEC in terms of its core function, i.e. the decisions that have got an impact on the economy, are made by a team of 12 commissioners, two of them full-time, which is the chief commissioner and the deputy chief commissioner, 10 of them part-time. That structure is the chairperson, Ambassador Ismail Faisal Ismail, who is also a part-time commissioner. Otherwise, ITEC reports through to the current Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition. We, in the past, reported to him when he was Minister in Economic Development, and with the merger of EDD and DTI again, we are back to reporting to the DTI or DTIC. Our mandate is taken straight from what the Act requires us to do. Basically, is to foster economic growth and development in order to raise incomes, promote investment and employment in South Africa and within the Common Customs Union area by establishing an efficient and effective system of administration of international trade subject to the Act and the SACU agreement. It's quite a mouthful, but in short, it basically says ITEC is responsible for the regulation of trade between, on the one hand, countries that constitute the Southern African Customs Union. Those countries are South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland, or Eswatini, on the one hand, and the rest of the world. So those countries are collectively called SACU, in short, and the term Common Customs Union refers to those SACU states. What is unique about that arrangement is that those countries together apply what is called a common external tariff, i.e. if there are goods that come into SACU or exit SACU, if there are duties that they're subject to, it will be the same duty across all those states. The core function of ITEC is to administer trade instruments in order to regulate trade. What are those trade instruments? They fall into three categories. The first category is what I call policy instruments, which are called tariffs, ordinary general tariffs. We use those to advance industrial policy objectives, whether it is in terms of protecting or providing support to a local producer in order to shield them somewhat from international competition, or to provide support to a local producer in order to bring down prices of a particular raw material inside South Africa. I'll say more about that later. So those are just ordinary customs duties. Then the second category are trade remedies or trade defense instruments. Those we use to protect our industry against unfair trade practices by producers in other countries who are exporting their goods to South Africa. There are three types. We've got anti-dumping instruments, countervailing duty, and safeguards. I'll say more about that again later. And then the last category of instruments is what is referred to in the slide as import-export control. Basically, those are permits which we issue for various reasons, whether it's for goods that are controlled under international agreements, such as CFCs, goods, items that deplete the ozone layer, or it's goods that contribute to industrial policy, such as scrap metal, or waiver of duties because of an agreement between South Africa and another country, but we want to control the movement of those affected goods through a permit. So those are the three instruments that we use, essentially. The decision-making structure is as follows. ITAC investigates, makes a decision. That decision is then transmitted to the Minister of Trade and Industry as a recommendation. He can then accept it, reject it, or refer it back to us for reconsideration. If he accepts it, and that decision involves a change in the duties that are applicable to a particular set of imported goods, he then speaks to his counterpart in the form of the Minister of Finance or Deputy Minister of Finance, requesting him to amend the schedule that publicizes the duty that is applicable to goods that are imported. So it is that conveyor belt. The key strategic objectives of ITAC and performance areas are set out on page 7, essentially ensure contribution to employment, creating growth and development through effective delivery of trade instruments. That's self-explanatory. I've talked to those instruments. Ensure strategic alignment and continued relevance with the Economic Development Department, which would now be the DTIC. We make a lot of input into, for instance, technical aspects of issues that are negotiated between ourselves and other countries. The most recent contribution, I guess, being on the SACU agreement or on the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement. And then ensure organizational efficiency and effectiveness. That's largely financial control and relating to the internal working so that we are an effective and functional organization. The legal framework, I've mentioned the ITA Act. We mentioned the World Trade Organization. South Africa is a member of the World Trade Organization. We, as a country, are bound to give effect to our obligations under that organization. A typical one is, for instance, when we raise the policy duties, there's a maximum to which you can raise them. If I use one which will perhaps stun you, is on cement you can raise duties up to zero policy duties. I don't know how that was negotiated, but I think there was an expectation that cement will never be imported into South Africa, but unfortunately now it is. However, on the trade defense instruments, I must mention, members, that we are able to exceed those boundaries. So, for instance, I use cement to show that we bound ourselves to keeping our policy duties at zero. However, when you look at the schedule, you see in part two that we have got duties ranging between, I think, 60% and 70% that are in place against Pakistani cement, because Pakistan was dumping that cement into South Africa and injuring in an act of unfair trade practice. And therefore, we acted to protect industry against that. So that is one way to exceed those boundaries. So South Africa is bound by obligations to the WTO. But the law that affects us as ITAC, as an agency of government, is domestic law. we have regard to our international obligations, however. And then we've got the regional agreements, the most pertinent one being the SACU agreement, which gives existence or gives rise to the SACU, the customs union called SACU. An interesting point about SACU is that it's the oldest customs union in the world, I think founded in 1909. And then bilateral agreements. One of the topical ones at the moment being the economic partnership agreement between what's called SACU-M, i.e. SACU states plus Mozambique on the one side and the European Union and its members on the other. I will skip the bit about the policy framework on page 10, but go to page 11, because that's where I think the heart of the presentation is. Our approach to tariff policy is not rigid. The DTI sets the policy framework for us. When we implement duties, we implement them consistent with that policy. But if, for instance, there is a push to increase protection, say, for the poultry sector, we don't say there's a push to increase duties, we then just increase duties willy-nilly. We still look into the detail and the specifics of that sector, and based on that, work out an appropriate duty. In the context of chicken, for instance, or poultry, the duty must optimize industrial output but not harm consumer welfare, particularly in view of the fact that chicken is an affordable source of protein for a spectrum of the South African population, from the poor to the rich. So when we set the duties, we are mindful of the impact, particularly on the more vulnerable portions of South Africa, and we would then do an impact assessment and set the duty having regard to that. We also place at the center of our work job creation, as we have heard from the objects and the vision of ITEC. The key output for us from industrialization of supporting the manufacturing sector and the growth of the manufacturing sector is job creation. We also, of course, have regard to investment, i.e. investment in plants and equipment so that South African producers are competitive, as well as transformation. I'll say more about that when I discuss reciprocal commitments, which is the next point. Recent developments at ITEC have entailed tying the granting of support to a commitment by the recipient of the support to certain indicators or certain objectives that are consistent with industrial policy. As I mentioned, one job creation, with a particular focus on youth and women. Two, competitiveness in investment into plants so that you don't get outcompeted by your peers outside South Africa. Three, growth. We would like to see entities growing, because if they grow, then the economy grows and jobs grow. And then research and development, so that we stay ahead of the curve. That is it, Honorable Mas, by way of just a quick background. I'll then move on to discussing the performance in the third quarter. On tariff investigations, i.e. on tariff instruments, we finalized three investigations. On appliances and on sodium hydroxide. You will notice in the presentation on page 13 that in third quarter we had a tariff reduction, we had a tariff increase, and we had a rebate. That actually is a neat and way of showing how what form tariff amendments take. When do we reduce tariffs? We reduce tariffs if a product is not manufactured in South Africa or is not manufactured in sufficient quantities to support the local demand. And largely, we reduce tariffs upstream in terms of raw materials or input materials that are used to manufacture value-added products downstream. As a general rule, we make exceptions. And I'll make an example, for instance. With aluminium rolled products, we for the longest time had not had duties or head duties at about 5%. We recently received an application for an increase in aluminium rolled products, which we are considering favorably. It hasn't been published yet, but if what we see is what ultimately transpires, you will see duties on an upstream product such as an aluminium rolled product. You all know about the support we gave to AMSA, which is an upstream player. And then tariff increase. Why do you give tariff increases? As I said, to advance economic growth by encouraging local production. What is interesting about DeFi side-by-side refrigerators is that these are products that are manufactured elsewhere in the world. DeFi is now owned by a Turkish company whose name escapes my mind now, but the localization of the manufacturing of fridges contributes to the consumption of steel from South Africa and the export orientation of the South African economy, backed by a powerful international player. And then rebates are given. Tariffs or duties are sometimes a blunt instrument. They block everything, even those items that we don't have and supply locally. So what you then do to open a gap for those things that you don't manufacture whilst retaining the protection is just to create a rebate. So those are the three investigations that we finalized, but we were seized with 23 in total investigations that are still in progress. As you see there, only two of those 23 are custom reductions, 8 are custom increases, and 13 are rebate amendments. The fact that we have got a large amount of increases in tariffs is a reflection of two things. One, that we're acting consistent with industrial policy, but two, the global trade environment has changed somewhat. There is rising protectionism. There is uncertainty about compliance with the WTO multilateral system with US and China engaged in a trade war outside the confines of the WTO system, as well as the unilateral actions by the US to impose duties on certain products, some of which affect us as a country. So with the rising protectionism, we have deemed it necessary and appropriate to also align our stance to increase protection where warranted for South African producers. On trade remedies, that's page 14. Again, there you've got quite a good representation of the type of instruments that we are using. You've got a sunset review at the top and anti-dumping at the bottom. That is one type of remedy. It's called an anti-dumping remedy. Again, for the benefit of new members, for the benefit of the members, I would like to describe what anti-dumping is or what an anti-dumping duty is. Dumping, as a word, refers to the sale of a product at a price in a foreign country at a price that is lower than your own domestic price. I use this box as an example. If this box in China is sold in China for $1, when it is sold to South Africa, it's sold at 50 American cents. You can see that it is sold to South Africa or exported to South Africa 50 cents cheaper than it is sold in China. Now, ordinarily, that would not be a problem in a free market system because you are allowed to compete on price. But if, as a result of reducing your prices with regard to your exports, you then cause material injury in the country to which you're exporting those goods, and that country also produces similar goods, then under WTO that is recognized as something that is actionable, as unfair trade. And you are then allowed to protect your industry by imposing a duty that reduces that difference or takes away that difference. So in the case of this example, South Africa would impose a duty of 50 cents because that's the price difference between the domestic price in China and the export price in South Africa. So once you've got those anti-dumping duties in place, they endure for a period of 5 years unless they are renewed. in an investigation to a sunset review. So that's why you see anti-dumping duties there at the bottom. Those will be the new duties that we have imposed in relation to PET. PET are these bottles, or the material used to make these bottles, and clear blue glass, that is glass used for, amongst other things, windscreens. So those are new duties that we're imposing. And then at the top, soda ash, wire roofs, stiff stamp plaster board, those are duties that are in place that are being renewed for a further 5-year period. You renew them if the party or the domestic industry shows that the removal of the duties will lead to a recurrence of dumping and injury. The other instrument that you see there are safeguards, safeguard duties. Those are also WTO sanctioned instruments. Maybe before I talk about safeguards, I would like to talk about another instrument that is not reflected there, which is called a countervailing duty. The countervailing duty is used to offset the effect of a subsidy that a foreign country gives to its producers and exporters. So again, if I use this box as an example, if it costs, as I said, it costs now, not price, it costs $1 to make it in China. But of that $1, the government gives that the Chinese producer 20 cents. It means the net effect to the Chinese producer is 80 cents. What South Africa would then do is that, okay, you've got a benefit of 20 cents from a government, we are going to impose a duty of 20 cents so that you feel the full impact of the cost of production, because South African companies which produce the same item are then adversely affected by that product. The reason you don't see that instrument here is because we don't use it a lot. One of the reasons is that there, when South Africa imposes what's called a countervailing duty to offset the subsidy, you are acting not against the company, but against another government. And that has got its own ramifications and own implications in terms of the relationship between South Africa and its other in other countries. So it's not an instrument that is used commonly in South Africa. But it is there, and it has been used, for instance, against steel wire roofs imported from India a long time ago. And then the safeguard duty, it's one of the instruments that is gaining popularity domestically and internationally, I dare say. It's got certain advantages. One, the anti-dumping duty instrument, even though it was popular, it's no longer used as often as it used to, and parties no longer make use of it, or at least South African companies no longer apply for it. I think in part because a lot of our imports originate from China, and it had become difficult to demonstrate or to find meaningful anti-dumping duties against China. The main reason for that is that China used to be treated as a non-market economy. Now it's treated as a market economy. So it's practically difficult to find a dumping margin in relation to China. So in order to offset that, or in order to get around that and the weaknesses of the anti-dumping instrument, parties are now using the safeguard instrument. A safeguard are generally used to deal with sudden large surges in the volume of imports, which are a result of unforeseen circumstances as well as the inability of South Africa to increase duties because of its commitment to the WTO. And that surge in imports again causes material serious injury to the producers of similar or competing goods in South Africa. To go on then to talk about some practical, I thought I should just include some practical examples on the use of some of these instruments, particularly with reference to some of the matters that are in the public domain at the moment. In slide 15, in slide 14, you've got a graph there which shows the trend in the importation of sugar into South Africa between 2018 and 2019. What you see there at the beginning is that the import volumes into South Africa in the orange color were quite high between January 2018 and June 2018. And then from August going forward, they declined quite substantially. The reason for the decline is that we, at that point, around August, we introduced or increased substantially the duties that are applicable on imports of sugar. I should mention, members, there that sugar originates from two sources. Sugar that affects South African producers has got two origins. One, deep sea imports, i.e. imports that come from outside the Southern African Customs Union. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, our instruments protect the Southern African Customs Union. So that is why you see when we increase duties on deep sea imports, they have an immediate impact on that category of imports. But another set of imports into South Africa now, as opposed to into South Africa, in relation to sugar, they originate from Swaziland. And Swazi producers are quite, fortunately for them, they've got better yields than South African farmers, or South African sugar producers. As a result, they're able to sell their sugar more competitively. It is also a reflection of a switch in market. Swazi sugar used to historically be exported to the EU, and when a quota that was reserved for Swaziland in the EU was removed, it became necessary for those Swazi sugar producers to find an alternative market, and that alternative market is South Africa. So you are seeing a combination of that. I should mention, though, that on both sides of the border, in Swaziland and South Africa, you do find the same companies producing sugar. So that's another dynamic there.
We will actually have 14 A and B, because we've got 14 tribes on pages of your slide. We can just say 14 A and 14 B.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah, because it's actually tribes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
No, that's fine.
Yes. On page 15, I just mentioned a safeguard investigation that we had last year. The only reason I mention this is that it's an example of a heartwarming example of an intervention to fight unfair trade practices, which results in job creation and the resuscitation of an industry that was basically on its knees. As soon as we introduced provisional duties against imports of screws last year, shortly thereafter, I think a few months thereafter, we received a letter from the industry saying what a difference that intervention has made. In the event those provisional duties have been finalized into final duties. Just to go quickly through the points on page 15, production increased substantially relative to the prior year. Sales increased significantly. Investment started rolling in. Employment increased by more than 20% in the industry, and those companies started receiving orders that would ordinarily have gone to foreign suppliers. So that, we thought, was quite, it wasn't something that an impact assessment that ITEC went out to do, but it was just the company writing back to us to say, since your intervention, this is what has happened. On import and export control, members, I'll just skip that. All that it says, it just tells you how many inspections were conducted. The only exciting thing about import-export control is that one of the items that you control is scrap metal, and scrap metal is good quality scrap metal is in short supply in South Africa. As a result, our foundries are struggling to be competitive, and as a result of the fact that scrap metal dealers are able to get better prices, particularly in the East Asian market, being India. The price preference system that we have put in place, even though it is suboptimal in its impact, is a way that we use at the moment to control and limit the exportation of scrap metal. And a development that might take place in relation to scrap metal is that it may rather become subject to an export duty if and when that duty come into play. I'm not sure if the members are aware, but a lot of work has been done by ITEC, working with National Treasury as well as the DTI, to try and bring into existence export duties. And the first product that is being targeted, as I said, is scrap metal. Then going on to financial performance quarter three, I would like to hand over to the CFO to give that report. From my side, I would just like to say I'm pleased to report that we have pretty much kept within budget, and we continue to operate as a going concern. We, for the past 2 years, we've been receiving a clean audit, and we expect to continue on that trajectory. Over to you, CFO.
Thank you, Thank you, Chief Commissioner, and good day, members. In terms of the financials for quarter three financial performance, ITEC's annual budget is about 108 million, and out of that 108 million, as at end of quarter three, we spend about 73% of that budget, and we were within the budget as well at the end of quarter three, and the majority of the 73% that has been spent is largely on employee-related costs, with 21% going to goods and services. And there's been a higher vacancy rate at ITEC for the past, I think, 2 or 3 years. The reason for that was largely to only fill critical positions in order to create a balance between your wage bill and what is left for goods and services, because it's been that for the past few years that employee-related costs have accounted for 80% of the budget. And one of the reasons that now we are filling critical position, and it's because we want to create a healthy balance between the employee-related costs and what is really left to execute functions in terms of the ITEC mandate. And as at end of quarter three, we had a surplus of about 1.8 million and within budget. And we also had a net asset position, which means that our assets were more than our liabilities by about 6 million. And I think because the financial pressures are just an issue that is not only related to ITEC, but that is at the national government level, one of the considerations that ITEC have been discussing for the past year or two with the Economic Development Department was that ITEC, through the ITA Act and the regulation, introduce a permit fee that should be levied for import and export permits. The process is actually at an advanced stage because in terms of the ITA Act, it says that ITEC may levy an administrative fee, but for ITEC to be able to do that, that needs to be introduced in the form of regulations. The regulations have been amended, and then they were issued for public comment. There was comments that were received from the public and the industries, and now they have been submitted to the minister. They've been submitted to Minister Patel for consideration, and if approved, it means in the next financial year, ITEC will then start levying a fee for issuing a both import and export permit, and that would alleviate some of the financial constraints that we've been under in the past few years. And those are constraints or the priorities that we're also looking into as soon as the funds becomes available ones. Like, for example, it's things like around the ICT infrastructure, because our systems and infrastructure at ITEC is very old, and because of budget constraints, we've not been able to deal or address some of those issues. So this is some of these things that will receive priority as soon as funds are becomes available. And also to automate some of these processes, especially around investigations, how and reporting, in order to make sure that our business processes, they are efficiencies there. And in all members, we're still within budget, and the message that is strongly communicated by National Treasury is that because there's very limited resources over national government, that we must always try our level best to remain within the resources that have been allocated. And we are trying our level best even for this last quarter to ensure that we are remaining within what has been allocated, because our budget is mainly allocations that we receive from National Treasury. Thank you, Chairperson and members.
Thank you, Chief Commissioner.
With those input, honourable members, our presentation is concluded. Perhaps just to add one thing which is not in this presentation, I think because of the nature of the work we do, chooses winners and losers amongst the actors in the economy. So if you apply for tariff support, the party that receives the tariff support is happy, the party that doesn't get tariff support is unhappy. That creates a potential for litigation, and there is litigation that we are involved in. But even though it's not contained in this report, I'm also pleased to say that for the past 2 years, ITEC has not just lost a case, despite operating in a litigious environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure then we can actually request the comments, questions for clarity from members. Pick up on that. I'll start up there. Cuthbert Mulder. Mantasha, Mbuyane, Daoud, okay, and then Hermans. Yeah, I'm still working on that, Hermans. Okay, Cuthbert, on the floor.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the first question that I'd like to ask the Chief Commissioner is if he has any feedback regarding the negotiations around the tariff lines at the AFCFTA secretariat level, and what the discussions are, shall I say, in the circles that RTAC meanders around that we don't necessarily. And then the second question I'd like to ask you is whether or not there are any applications from the steel industry regarding a possible tariff increase. You would have seen that Saldana or AMSA Saldana plant closed down. They're also downscaling further at Newcastle and Vereeniging. And my personal view is that we are protecting them far too much. We need to allow for more focus on the downstream steel industry. But that aside, what is the step, or what steps shall RTAC be taking going forward regarding AMSA? And considering the fact that they haven't necessarily stuck to, you know, the job retention targets that they had set for themselves, can we still say that, I think if I'm correct in saying 22% worth of customs and excise duties are actually validated? Then the third question I have, Chair, is on page 13 regarding DeFi appliances, Eastern Cape, PTY Limited, regarding side-by-side refrigerators. Could the Chief Commissioner give us a little bit more background on that particular issue and whether or not there were any arguments around the ad valorem tariffs that were raised on that particular item, and whether or not there was any discussion around that? I'd appreciate that answer. Thanks very much, Chair.
Okay,
thank you, Chair, Commissioner. My question rises to page 17 and 18. As far as the vacancy rate is concerned, and if budget constraints, the filling of critical posts, and the possible fee that we leveled all about budget regarding to the budget, My question is, look, South Africa's economy is under stress even before the newest development on the because of the coronavirus, and seeing that the economy has cooled down a lot if you take the situation of ITAC, does this really impact that negatively on your operations, on ITAC's operations, in relation with how the economy has cooled down? Is there a relation or a correlation of the downscaling? Because, one would always need a larger budget, but how much bigger must the budget be to really operate effectively? And the second question is, as far as the possible fee is concerned that's planned to be levied, how much money or percentage of your budget do you think ITAC could actually get in with that measure? Thank you, Chair.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe I didn't listen. I didn't hear exactly, or I didn't hear what I wanted to hear. Chair,
members are in agreement will love sugar.
I love sugar. Chair, the competition on sugar, South African sugar industry has suffered a blow because of the imports from Brazil in particular. Is there a concrete plan to ensure that that will not visit us again? What is the intention of ITAC in curbing that? And this notion of having companies both in Swaziland and South Africa, is that not being hooligans on the part of the businesses that do that? And how can we curb it? Because I'm not comfortable about it. I don't want to insult anyone, but I am uncomfortable. I don't know how to put it mildly. How does it? Eswatini, why do they have same companies in South Africa and in Swaziland? And then when they are hammered in the international world, they just transfer that sugar to us because they are a member of SACU. Is there any punishment that we can impose on them? And how do we keep such in happening in other companies and in other sectors? Because it is at the detriment of South African economy. And my worst is, how to explain, if I heard it correctly, 73% of the budget is towards employees. Then why are you...
No, she's very flat, but 73% is
spent on employees. Mm. On what?
On total budget.
I need an explanation towards this 73. I didn't hear it. That's why I said I didn't hear what I wanted to hear.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to safeguard, because I would be uncomfortable if I don't want to put words in your mouth. Explain to me what were you saying. I didn't hear you clearly. If what I heard is correct, but I don't want to say it now. I didn't hear you clearly. But tell me exactly. Which portion, how much is towards your employee compensation, and how much is towards your day-to-day, your mandate, so that we understand you, because for you to have clean audits throughout does not clearly mean that you are on the right track. You are able to keep books in order, and the mandate is not carried as far as we would wish to. Chair, the steel, what is this now again? Scrap metal.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do to discourage South Africans to export scrap metal? Because we understand that it is cheaper to manufacture using scrap metal in as far as energy consumption is concerned. But on a day-to-day, in particular in my province, people, you will find them along the road with huge amounts of scrap metal. They're taking it to Durban and next to the port for export. And that, for me, is detrimental to our industrialization agenda. What is ITEC going to do with it? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. One will question the establishment in 1924, the ITEC, seeing that in 4 years' time, there will be 100 years. They will be celebrating a centenary. What is it that South African people will be celebrating of the 100 years from ITEC? Chairperson, history of trade is dealing with theory of comparative advantage. For instance, the nation should specialize in that economic activity where it's less infectious. So I really just want to check in terms of the mandate of the ITEC and the core function, whether they are related to that in terms of job creation. They also check the ethical critique. I just want to check as to the ITEC, what is it saying? Because it leaves many countries as low value added producers. And also trade liberalization, create adjustment, cost for workers, at least firms are competitive in the country. In terms of the dual mandate, or maybe the dual role that you're doing in South Africa and in SACCO, the farmers of sugar cane from South Africa, they from South Africa, after 1994 they went to Swaziland and Maputo, they now coming back. And part of them, they're in SASA, and also, I don't know what the organization there is. So I just want to check your role in there, in trying to assist, because you see, if South Africans cannot be able to produce sugar or export sugar while they are neighboring countries who are dumping sugar in South Africa, really I don't see your mandatory role being on the plate. Chairperson, the issue of the import and export control that you spoke of, the permit-free agreement, I don't know, because you're saying you're only using money that is allocated by the DTI. Don't you have admin fee or revenue generation arrangement so that you can be, as ITEC, sustainable? Because your core mandate, I don't really understand whether as DTI are we funding you to execute job in SACCO. Or what is it that you do? Do you have a revenue strategy, revenue generation strategy? The countervailing, dumping, and safeguard. I don't know what role at SACCO are you playing in terms of dealing with this trade. The dumping, the countervailing, and the safeguard. Overspending on professional fees. Can I be clarified? Why are you overspending on professional fees? Who do you pay? You don't have capacity. You you require service providers also. Hence, that is why I wanted to check. But in terms of your demographics, human resource, I'm happy you fine with it. How far is the tariff support of the sugar industry and the steel? Because we're told that by 2020, I don't know, around July, so there will be a tariff support in terms of the sugar industry. I'll pause there for now.
Thanks, Chair. Only one question. What measures are you putting in place to protect our industries against international companies that receive export subsidies within the framework of WTO?
Emma?
Thank you, Chair. I think, first of all, let us thank the presenters for this presentation. And it's good to speak to an entity that's staying within its budget and managing with the cost-cutting measures. But I want to just add my voice to Honourable Mulder's question around the impacts of not filling those vacancies on you fulfilling your mandate. Then, as we do with other entities that come to report to us, Chair, I think we must get some idea of the designated groups like the disabled and women that are employed in your sector. Also, when we had a session with the minister, I think it was last week, speaking about SONA, trade and industry matters related to SONA, the overriding, or maybe not overriding, one of the priorities is the empowerment of women and youth. So I think when any entity comes to report to us, they must tell us about those sectors and how far they are, and be open and honest so that they can improve if they are not meeting at least minimum targets that are set. I think a part of the CFO's presentation was a cost recovery or income generation in terms of, I think, your issuing of permits. So in your projection, what percentage of your, what is your estimation of what money you will be able to raise from that, and where would you, what would you offset with those funds that you, yeah, that you will be raising? I think other than that, I've been covered, Chair. Thank you so much.
Before I pass on, Honorable Yako, you're fine. Thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Can we then actually get the Chief Commissioner and the team? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I will attempt to answer them. I will also not follow any particular order. I would like to start maybe with the sugar question.
That is a bit of a challenge. Mbuyana was talking about that earlier. Mwatse, maybe you can say something before we actually see how we proceed with the responses, because it does actually impact on how we manage the meeting when you ask the question and then we try and respond and the person is actually out. So it is just a point there. Mwatse, I'm not sure if you have anything to add. Because I'm checking you and Yako as members that haven't said anything yet, but I think we will then proceed. Cuthbert?
Thanks, Chair. Can we not just answer the questions in the order in which they came, because then we avoid that problem.
Okay, I'll do that.
Well, I think that might be a technical thing. We can speak about some other point. And I think Chief Commissioner, It was just a point of saying, oh, the person who asked the question has just walked out. She's not back yet. So, but I think we may actually find that in response to question, you may not actually answer, start with the first one. You may start with the last one, I'm just saying. But it's quite important that we allow you to proceed. And if ever she's not in, we will actually explain to her.
Okay.
If ever the commissioner decides to pick on that question, I'm just saying for members, that will be actually quite okay, because we won't have a control of the team before us in how they respond, but they'll definitely have to pick up on the questions we ask. Chief Commissioner, floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. The reason I thought I should start with Shuga is because quite a lot of the members have spoken about it. So I thought, let me just deal with it so that I answer a few questions at the same
time. Well, the passionate member to Shuga is here already. I'm sure you can proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by sketching the context within which the sugar industry exists. The sugar industry is a regulated industry. South Africa has geared its sugar production such that it produces a surplus. You sell locally, and then anything left over you export, and there's quite a lot that we export. The global environment is such that there's also an oversupply of sugar, recently driven by India, Indian overproduction. What that creates is a dynamic where international sugar prices are low relative to domestic sugar prices. So if a South African producer sells sugar in South Africa, they get a better price. If they sell it in the export market, they get a bad, low price. So the desire by local sugar producers is to sell as much as possible locally and sell as little as possible externally. However, as part of government policy to support the rural economy, it is geared the way it is geared. So you've got a lot of domestic production, a lot of production that is geared also for exports. The second important factor is that the government of South Africa, out of the concern of the health of South Africans, introduced a health protection levy. The health protection levy is designed to reduce sugar consumption by human beings in South Africa. The information I have is that it has reduced the size of the local market by approximately 20%. And the loss stems from two quarters. One, consumers, ordinary consumers who are consuming less sugar. Human beings consuming less sugar. And the second one is companies.
What is that?
About 20%, I guess. That's an estimate that I have. The other leg is the industrial consumers of sugar, the Coca-Colas, the Tiger brands, and so on, who make products that consume a lot of sugar. They themselves are reformulating their products so as to minimize or remove the use of sugar, because that's what the tax is designed to do, to incentivize them to use sugar. So as a result of that, you've got the sugar that historically would have been consumed in South Africa not being consumed. You've got import competition, and then you've got your sugar being sold outside South Africa at low prices. So that's a difficult position for the sugar industry to be in. What has ISEC done about it? ISEC, as at August of 2018, I think, or July, thereabouts, increased or altered the dollar-based reference price in order to increase the level of protection that it gives to the sugar producers. Since There's a graph that's here, which shows that the volume of imports from outside SACU since the increase of those duties has reduced drastically. I should mention, honorable members, that the duties have been quite high since that change. They've ranged between 80 and 100%. So it's not been low protection, it's been significant protection. And it's a fluctuating duty, because the idea is to respond also to, it's basically to respond to the fluctuating international prices. That's how sugar is priced. We have said to the sugar industry that if there is a particular country that they would like us to act against, Brazil or India, there are other instruments that we can use in addition to the one that is already in place. I spoke about those instruments. They include anti-dumping duties, because those would be country-specific. We did have a meeting with them, and they have not come back to us with an application, but we alerted them to that. So, lastly, on the sugar that is produced inside SACU, which is not affected by our instruments, two things, honorable members. One, SACU is a free trade area, and I am aware that part of the conversation between South Africa and the Swazi government, when South Africa raises, and I'm not in ministry, so this is third-party information, is that South Africa, what the Swazis consume, all of it, virtually, is made in South Africa. The only thing that they export to South Africa, which we consume, is sugar. Now, out of everything that we supply to them, the one thing that they've got a competitive advantage on, we then say, "Aye, stop it. It's not entirely fair." And I might sound like I'm arguing for the Swazis here, but what I'm saying is that it is in the nature, it's one argument that we face as South Africa. But let's move on from that argument and say, what is the import of establishing a free trade area? That means you establish a common market and a common production area. So if we sell to Swaziland, they don't impose duties on our goods that go into Swaziland. So likewise, when they sell to us, we also don't impose duties. That's what the free trade area does. And then lastly, about the existence of South African companies in Swaziland. South African companies exist in many countries. It's not just Swaziland. Both inside SACU and outside SACU. A company that is in the services space, MTN, derives a lot of revenue from Nigeria. It is good for the fiscus because we were able to get more tax from expanding South African companies or growing South African companies. So, and now with the introduction of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, there is a direct benefit to South Africa because South Africa has got the biggest manufacturing base on the African continent, bigger than Egypt, bigger than Nigeria, bigger than Kenya. If it works as it is explained and it is implemented, South Africa will be able to expand its growth because you'll be able to produce and sell not just locally to a market of 50 million people, but a bigger market of more than 1 billion people. So that is the benefit of free trade agreements. But unfortunately, there's also the downside of the type that we're talking about here. But the sugar story, honorable members, is not just about tariffs, it's not just about Swaziland. It's about the government decision that we want South Africans to consume less sugar.
Well, the good thing as well is that we do have a master plan,
yes,
which covers lots of issues on sugar.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just maybe to wrap up with the master plan is designed to resuscitate not just sugar, but the impact in the real economy of these developments that you've talked about. So some of the things that are referred to in the master plan are development of new products to replace sugar, such as macadamia nuts, the use of sugar in other products such as fuel, such as polymers to make these bottles. Part of the commitments that the likes of the industrial users of sugar are expected to make if the master plan takes shape is that they will start buying bottles that are 30% made from polymers made from sugar. So there are those initiatives to try and support the sugar industry in that fashion and the real economy. I would like to move on, members, from the sugar story and hope that I've answered quite a lot of the questions that have been asked. The second one, which is always been asked by several members, is the impact of the vacancy rate and the budget constraints on ITEC. The CFO will say a bit more. I just want to make just a few remarks to say the moratorium, in fact, let me start first by saying that the biggest budget item in ITEC is salaries and wages, salary. And that is because of the nature of the organization we are. We are almost like a consulting firm. Our work is done by highly skilled professionals, lawyers, economists, cost accountants. That's the type of person that you have on average at ITEC. And the work we do is we go out, we investigate, we analyze, we prepare reports, we report. So it's inescapable that you spend a lot of money to fund it. The second big cost item is rental. Yeah. It's rental. We hope that now that we are back within the TTI fold, we'll be able to negotiate a lower rent with our landlord. But it's quite a substantial. I think it's between 6 and 10%.
Yeah, it's about 6%.
About 6% of our allocation. And then the next one is professional fees. Professional fees, they vary from one year to another. It depends. As I said, we operate in a litigious environment. Depending on the number of cases you have per annum and the invoices that are rendered, you then, in one year, might have a low litigation rate, in one year, have high litigation rate. But yes, we do use consultants, lawyers, to help us with a lot of the work that we do. We've got one senior manager legal, and then we've got our policy and research senior manager who has got some legal background. So we do need to engage outside consultants. Does this high vacancy rate affect our operations? Yes, it does. Does it cripple the organization? No, it doesn't, because our moratorium is not blunt. We modulate. Where there are critical posts to fill, as the CEO has said, we then make a plan and fill those critical posts. Recently, or this year, we'll be filling some critical posts in the finance unit, as well as in the flagship program of government, the automotive production development program. We'll be appointing some managers there. Where do we cut? Other than salaries, we also reduce. If I just take one step back, the import-export control unit requires us to send inspectors out into the field to look at what's happening on the ground. Scrap metal, for instance, we've increased our enforcement there to make sure that unlawful activity in relation to export of scrap metal is curbed. That requires traveling, that requires accommodation. So what you'll find is that we then do a lot of our work inland, Gauteng in particular, because it generates a lot of scrap. And then Durban, because it's a port of export, main port of export for scrap. So we then tailor our activities to try and target those countries, and then maybe do unscheduled inspections. So that what that means is that we do less inspections, but we try to target them. We try to be strategic about how we do it. Yes, by targeting high risk areas. So it does, but we're still managing. It would be better if we had more money, but you know, the message is there's no money to do with what you have. There are some key other positions that I would personally be happy to have. The special advisor, we don't have. The chief economist, the question that we're asking about the ultimate economic impact of the work that we do is the work that should be done by the chief economist. We improvise and use some economists inside the organization to produce some reports, but we are nowhere where we'd like to be in terms of that type of work. And then to talk about the export subsidies, Honorable Ndlovu, the instrument we have in dealing with subsidies that foreign countries give to their producers, as I mentioned earlier, anti-subsidy duties. We've got that instrument. The usual way to use it is countervailing duties, but essentially that instrument is meant to offset the benefit that foreign producers get because they're supported by their government. The challenge with that instrument, and which is why you don't really see a lot of it in our report, is because a subsidy that a foreign company receives, it receives it from a state, a player. From, if you take Chinese producers, they'll receive it from the government of China. When you impose a countervailing duty against the government of China, you are acting, it's South Africa as government acting against another government. It complicates the political and international relations of South Africa. So that instrument is not used for a lot. But as I said in my presentation, it has been used in relation to India many, many years ago. Mr. Cuthbert, you asked about the...
Maybe just to disturb you a bit, I know for members they always have a very tight watch.
Yes.
So I know that because I've gone to one, I was just thinking, Chief Commissioner, what we may have to agree upon is to actually send us written responses to questions. And I was actually thinking I can ask the committee to actually agree that on the item we have of our minutes, that we actually look at that in our next meeting, and then actually ask that we actually bring copies of what we have in terms of minutes to our next meeting. So sorry to disturb you, Chief Commissioner, just thinking that I know that we all run in different spaces as committee members. So stealing more time, it might be actually a bit of a challenge. We want to comment on that, Cuthbert? Let me hear.
Thanks, Chair. I'm happy to agree to that. I'd just like a deadline as to when we'll receive those responses, Chair.
Okay. So it should be within the 7 days? Within the 7 days. So it means same day next week, we should have received that latest, it's same day in the coming week, Chief Commissioner. Yeah. So let me actually just apologize for that, but thank you very much for the interaction that we actually had. And I think in terms of the program, today we're actually sitting is the 11th. The next session will be the 17th on the adopted program we have. We will actually be looking at the third quarter for the DTI. It will be DTIC. Remember, we're changing that now. Department of Trade and Industry and Competition. Okay. Well, technically, by 1st of April, we should be able to say that without much challenges. So, Hermans, you wanted to say something? I'm just wanting to round up, Hermans.
Yeah, I know you want to round up, Chair, and I fully support that. Can I just request that we request a joint briefing with all the departments? I know the sugar master plan is led by the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform, that we request because it's such an important issue for this committee also, that we request a joint meeting with a briefing on the progress of that master plan.
So you're talking Shuka? You remember I added Cannabis as well on that. So I'm sure Secretariat will look at that. Cuthbert, can I try and close? Let me hear you.
Chair, regarding our earlier conversation, has the Secretariat received any word from the NLC regarding the terms of reference that they were going to provide us as soon as they landed in Pretoria today?
The Secretariat is saying not yet. I'll ask them to follow through. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Chief Commissioner and the team, thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned.